Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, so when you told me who did get fired, makes a little sense, in my mind at least.
The city of Chicago is rejoicing today, I think,
Craig
for the most
Council?
Part.
No, that's crazy.
Craig Council remains the Cubs manager, but Pedro Grifol is out today. They have let Pedro Grifol go after a just horrendous, horrendous season. Team is commencing a search for a new manager immediately, does not expect a full-time replacement to be announced until after the season. As we all recognize, our team's performance this season has been disappointing on many levels. Despite the on-field struggles and lack of success, we appreciate the effort and professionalism Pedro and the staff brought to the ballpark every day. These two seasons have been very challenging. The results were not there. Change is necessary as we look to our future and the development of a new energy around the team from Chicago White Sox general manager Chris Getz. What Chris wants, Chris gets.
If I'm, okay, this makes sense to me. People are going, why even bother? It's not like you're trying to turn anything around at this point.
It has happened. Rob Thompson's a great example. Fire Joe Girardi.
Yeah, but that season was still salvageable, obviously. They went on to the World Series
year.
This one is not.
Like you said, it's a new energy. If you have somebody, they clearly, I think, have somebody in mind where they say, maybe go
audition.
Kind of an audition
for a month and a half.
And then we got
some more info.
How do you? They're horrendous.
But why not do it? You know, in that long losing streak, they just won a game 2 days ago. Now they lost again last night. But I don't think you saddle even an interim manager with a record losing streak. Like, you have to let Grifol see that one to its end.
See that one through,
and then once you win, you don't fire a guy right after a win. So then now you're waiting for the next loss. I think my guess is that Chris Getz about a week ago said, okay, we got to make a change, but I'm not firing him and putting an interim manager in the situation where you now have to deal with an historic losing streak.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait until they win, and then I'm not going to do it when they win, but then when they lose, I'm going to do it after that. So honestly, it makes a lot of sense if you're going to make that change. Now, make Ozzie Guillen the interim GM, the interim manager. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be something else. He crushes that team on the postgame show. It's hysterical.
Fans would love that.
Just, yeah, they would.
The entertainment value is the only thing that would be left for that season would be, what is Ozzie going to do today?
Yeah.
I guarantee you they won't do that.
He's good copy is what he is. I mean, to cover him, he's good copy for people to cover Ozzie Guillen. But, yeah, man, I mean, he is one of those guys, though, that is so anti-modern baseball. Like, he loathes modern baseball. But you never know what will work with the team and what won't.
So we're going to get into the weird bottom of the ninth inning. And if you didn't stay all the way through the post-game show and, like, follow the drama on Twitter and to find out what actually happened and the umpire's role in it all, we'll get to that coming up in Don't Do This. We do need a contestant for Real or Fake, though. If you want to call in right now, chance to qualify for a trip to Las Vegas, 833-288-0973. 833-288-0973. Adam will put you on hold, get to our game in just a couple of minutes. I want to get to the other Padres news of the day from before the game, though, and that is the plan for this weekend in Miami for the pitching rotation. So Mike Shildt named Randy Vasquez as his starter for today. Now, waited a few days to do it. This is as unsurprising as any move, as it is Randy Vasquez's turn in the rotation, and this is just sticking with what you've been doing by going with Randy Vasquez. He then said that Dylan Cease will pitch this weekend in Miami, possibly on Sunday, but he left the door open to potentially throwing him on a different day, but it also seemed to be indicated that Joe Musgrove, who they had already announced will return this weekend in Miami, now may be pushed back to Monday and pitch against the Pirates at Petco Park in the first game of the homestand. And while they haven't named any official starters for the weekend, my thinking, Woods, and tell me if you agree, is they'll just remain then on track with Martin Perez on Friday, tomorrow.
Okay.
And then Matt Waldron on Saturday. Dylan Cease on his regular rest, even though he only pitched an inning. Just wait until Sunday to throw Dylan Cease. And then Joe Musgrove will slide in on Monday with, hopefully, you know, Dylan Cease having gone deep into the game on Sunday. You'll have a good bullpen behind Joe Musgrove, who's still expected to be limited to about 65 pitches, around four innings,
yeah,
maybe.
That's
so.
I mean, that's a decent strategy. Joe pitching at home. You know, Joe pitching at home means he's got to get the first three outs, right? So if you're on the road, maybe you can stake him to a 3-4 run lead or whatever. But it's 6-1, half dozen the other. I really don't care either way. As long as he's back and effective, I think they have probably, they've probably racked their brains over the best way to do this. And again, Benny, I think it's all dependent, right? Everything changes. There's nothing set in stone. You can't have it that way in baseball, really, unless you have all five starters just healthy and ready to go, and very few teams have that.
And I don't know how much strategy is going into it. We can talk to Mike Shildt about it tomorrow, what he's willing to reveal.
Sure.
But not getting guys a second look at the same pitcher. When you play a team, one of these bounce-back series where you play them twice in a span of a week, do you want to try to get a different guy? Now, they only saw Dylan Cease for an inning.
Yeah, one inning.
But, Joe Musgrove, obviously, they haven't seen.
Right.
And then after Joe, if you stay on turn, it would be going back to, what would it be going back to? Not Michael King yet. Who pitched 2 days ago? Who pitched before Dylan Cease?
Waldron.
So, you'd be going back to King, I guess?
Yeah.
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 So, I guess they'll get to see King twice either way.
We got a lineup out, and I'm...
Good news.
I am shocked as I've ever been, but you got Luis Arraez leading off, playing first base. Jerickson Profar in the lineup.
Good. So, the x-rays not only were negative, but he's feeling good enough that they have put him into the lineup batting second today.
You got Crony.
Not even as DH. They have him out in left field.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Out in left field. Crony playing second. Manny at third. Xander Bogaerts will be your DH today. Jackson Merrill in center. And Peralta in right. Ha-Sung Kim back at short. And Kyle Higashioka will catch Randy Vasquez today.
Okay. So that is excellent news. The Jerickson Profar, who probably lobbied strenuously to be back in the lineup today, will be there after getting plenty of treatment, I'm sure, last night and this morning. I'm sure he's got a nasty black and blue on it. But he's been dealing with, you know, knee issues and the tendonitis all season long.
That,
probably old hat for him.
That ball, when it hit his knee and careened like 25 feet away, I mean, that had to hurt so bad. So bad.
The way he tossed his helmet. Not so much.
He's not mad at the pitchers.
Angry, but just
mad
in that
pain.
Pain.
You're
he's
mad at the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
And then he went down and, like, he tried to get up and, you know, it's like, get down, you know,
stay down.
Give yourself a second here, and insisted on staying in the game. But then when, you know, Mike Shildt saw him trying to run to second base and having trouble slowing up and at second, that's an important run out there. And he pulled him for the pinch runner in Ha-Sung Kim, who then stayed into the game, which was a big factor, by the way, in what happened in the bottom of the ninth inning. And we're going to get to that coming up in Don't Do This in our next segment. So stay tuned. Some very interesting happenings late in that game that you might not be aware of. Right now, though, we got full phone lines. Everybody wants to play real or fake on a Throwback Thursday. Adam, if you would please.
Some are here for the compelling sports talk with Ben and Woods.
Yeah, you can go plow through another donut.
It's time for Real or Fake on 97.3 The Fan. Tell the people what they'll win today.
All right, we're playing for the two-night stay at Resorts World Las Vegas and two tickets to Carrie Underwood. If you can get 4 out of 7 correct, you will go into our grand prize drawing. Carrie Underwood, Reflection at Resorts World Theater. It's a residency from August 14th to October 26th. Tickets are on sale now at AXS.com, RWLasVegas.com. I'm just going to go completely at random. Let's go line 6. William? Is this William?
Yeah, that's Jim.
All right, you are a contestant today on Real or Fake. You know the rules? I will review. It's a very simple game. I will give you the category. All you have to do is decide whether it's real or fake. If you get four right, and you can even get Woods' help, we will put you into the drawing for the grand prize.
Yeah.
All right, Woods, you ready?
Yes.
All right, so we've been focused on the Padres, obviously. Apparently, they are still getting ready for a new NFL season this year.
No bother.
There is actually a full slate of preseason games this weekend. So, what a better time to get caught up on the current state of the game. Today on Real or Fake, I'll give you a name. You just tell me if they are a real current head coach of an NFL team or if it's a fake. In this case, Team USA Olympic medalist at the Games in Paris. Couldn't be easier, right, William? NFL head coach, real.
Sure.
Olympic medalist, fake. All right, Adam, you got the buzzes and the dings ready? All right, round number one. NFL head coach, real or fake? Brian Callahan. Real or fake, William?
Oh, Callahan.
Brian Callahan.
I'll say fake.
He's going to say fake. Adam? Brian Callahan is the coach of, any idea, Woods?
No.
Tennessee Titans. New coach of the Titans this year. That's all right. You're still in the game. Let's go to round number two. Tom Schar. Real or fake, William? You can ask Woods for help. I don't know how much he knows about the Olympians or the coaches.
Yeah, Woods, do you have any idea?
I sure do. I did a public event with Tom Schar when I worked at 94.9. He was about 12 years old. And he was a skateboarder and came in. We did like an interview. And he is an Olympic gold medalist as of yesterday.
So he's going to say fake, William. Would you like to agree?
Yes.
All right, and it is. Yeah, that is correct. I would have stunned you if I had said no. He's the coach of the
the Panthers.
No, he is not. All right, so that's one correct. All right, let's go to round number three. Mike McDonald, real or fake, William?
That sounds real.
Hmm.
I know there is a McDonald. Woods.
He's the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
No, he's... Oops, sorry.
Mike McDonald. Wait. No, but that's Mike McDaniel. All right. It's not official yet. Mike McDaniel. Mike McDonald is an Olympian.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll say false then.
He's the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks.
Of course he is.
Mike McDaniel is the coach of the Miami Dolphins.
It really threw me for a loop.
Mike McDonald is
you can't
the coach
have a Mike McDaniel
Seahawks.
And a Mike McDonald. There's rules in play here.
He's also a great backup singer. All right, let's go to round number four. Let's try Sam Kendricks. Real or fake head coach in the NFL, William?
That's got to be fake. It's got to be fake. Got to be.
Fake.
And that is correct. He's
Thank
a silver
God.
Medalist in the pole vault. All right, you got No.
Oh.
No, he's French. This is an American.
That guy.
Round number five. Let's try Brady Ellison. Head coach in the NFL, real or fake? William?
Brady Ellison.
I'm going to say fake.
You can say fake. All right, he's confident. Silver medalist in archery. Congratulations. That's three. All right,
you need one
more correct, and you get it. All right, round six. Grant Fisher. Real or fake? NFL head coach. Grant Fisher.
I don't sound familiar for football. So, Woods, what do you think?
Boy, I think it does sound familiar. Sounds like a head football coach to me. This is a toughie.
It's your decision,
fake.
William.
Let's say fake.
It's your decision.
Yeah. Well, Fisher used to be a head coach a long time ago, but I'll go with Woods to say real.
I don't even know what
Before
Woods decided,
did,
but
said, I said fake.
You know what? He said it doesn't matter. You said real. Oh. Your answer's locked in. It is.
Okay.
He's a bronze medalist in the 10,000 meters. That's how you got one more.
Oh.
I think you guys can get this
one. Okay.
Round seven for all the marbles. Jonathan Gannon. Right.
Jonathan Gannon?
Gannon. Jonathan Gannon. Real or fake? Come on, William. Jonathan Gannon.
Ah. What is this? What do you think, Woods?
Is that don't make this game easy. I mean, we got a good prize.
Jonathan Gannon, I believe, is a head football coach.
All right, Woods says real. William?
All right, well, let's go real, then.
It is! Yeah, he's the coach of the Arizona Cardinals, and in a very tense game, once again, you have qualified, William, for the grand prize drawing. Stay on the line, Adam, sometime in the next few minutes. He'll get to you and get your information, so just be patient, and thank you for playing today's game of real or fake. All right, this hour on Ben and Woods is brought to you by... Who is it brought to you by, Woods? I'll tell you. It's California Coast Credit Union. Get 9.5% APR rate on a five-month certificate for a limited time at Cal Coast Credit Union as they celebrate 95 years in the community. $500 minimum balance. Restrictions apply. Issued, insured by NCUA. Visit calcocu.org/celebrate. All right, Don't Do This is coming up next. And we're sticking with the Padres on this one. And what happened in last night's game, the good and the bad, coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan after traffic.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't do this.
I got a little surprise for you, you know what I'm saying?
Don't do this.
Listen, if I've said something bad, I mean, tell me I'm a bad boy. You know, just tell me I'm a bad boy.
Why? Just why?
I get the argument. You don't have to explain it to me. I'm not a moron.
Let me tell you why I am a dumbass.
It's time for Don't Do This.
Don't do this.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Hi, Don't Do This is brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sereno Valley, where Paulie had an amazing experience yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday.
Had the bulgogi taco. He said it was life-changingly good. You can check out the Kraft Taco yourself by going to thecrafttaco.com. Take a look at those happy hour specials. Great for a Thursday or a Friday at thecrafttaco.com. Woodsy, why don't you start our Don't Do This special Padres Pirates edition today?
And the thing that really, in my opinion at least, I thought the dive by Bryce Johnson in the first inning after Michael King had a nice start, striking out the first two guys he saw. Guy hits a kind of a bleeder. Well, yeah, I don't know the exit velo on it.
It was a bleeder. It was like 80.
He's running in for it. And again, man, you're wanting to make a play, but it's risk reward in that scenario. You can then have a guy. You know, if it gets past you, you're going to have a guy in scoring position. Kiner Falefa gets to third, all the way to third. Rowdy Tellez comes up, hits a check swing dribbler down the line. It's 1-0, just like that. And again, you let that ball fall in front of you. I thought Michael King started to spiral a little bit in the first inning. Ended up throwing 30 pitches. Man, play it back. It's the first inning. Let it bounce. Nobody's going to call you out for a lack of effort because you really weren't that close to that baseball. And once you dive, you're pot committed. He was not able to knock it down. You see that sometimes a guy dives and is able to kind of knock it down and keep it in front of him, keep the guy to first base. And I thought that could have, I think that changed the trajectory of the first inning.
Yeah,
for
I mean, now he could have still gotten out of the inning. You know, he got a check swing from Tellez. That was unlucky. Then I think a walk and then a double. Maybe they would have scored two runs anyway. Even if he had been at first, that guy would have eventually come around to score. However, I think you're right in that it changed the trajectory of the inning. I'm also thinking you're right that, yes, when you get to play as, you know, infrequently as Bryce Johnson, you want to do something special. You want to show you're hustling.
Hey, by the way,
that one wasn't even that hard of a call. That one's you always let that one fall with two outs and nobody on.
Yeah.
Just let that one drop. Don't let him get to second, and certainly don't let him get to third. It was a sloppy game, though. Manny had a throwing error. Xander had that big error. There were four unearned runs scored. Quite frankly, the Padres did not deserve to win that game.
No, they didn't.
And they won it anyway.
Yep. And, you know, credit to Bryce Johnson where credit's due. The night before, when he's playing right field, slick, sloppy, wet field. Dylan sees, I think it was the first batter of the game. Bryce Johnson made a spectacular catch running over to the line and for the first out of the game. I mean, the guy barreled it. And Bryce Johnson made a great play. Last night was one of those. Maybe you just let it fall in front of you. You know, keep him at first base, and maybe the inning goes a little bit differently.
All right. The second Don't Do This goes, I guess I'll give it to the umpiring crew for what happened in the ninth inning. And we didn't even know at the time how involved it got. But remember, Padres are now tied at six after Jackson Merrill's home run. And Mike Schilt brings in Robert Suarez, the well-rested Robert Suarez. But you're figuring, all right, I mean, you need to get through this inning. Then you need to score in the top of the 10th. And then you still need to close it out. And you have Tanner Scott. He pitched the day before. But I'm guessing you're wanting more than three outs from Robert Suarez here, if possible. So how is it that he only ended up throwing six pitches in that inning? It started out, first pitch was a single up the middle. The second pitch was the error by Xander Bogaerts that put runners at first and second. Could have been a double play, you know, could have changed the course of everything. The third pitch was a sacrifice bunt by Yasmani Grandal that moved the runners to second and third. The fourth pitch was ball one, and then they decided to intentionally walk. Who was it, the batter that they, whoever they
decided? Was it Ke'Bryan Hayes?
Ke'Bryan Hayes,
yeah.
To load the bases. So Robert Suarez has thrown four pitches. At this point, the bases are loaded with one out. The winning run is at third base for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And Bay comes up.
There's G-Wan center.
G-Wan Bay comes up. Now, he's a lefty. It's a righty-lefty matchup. But Tanner Scott, I don't think they were planning on pulling him in from the bullpen. I don't even think he was warming up yet. Because he'd only thrown five pitches at this point. Then the umpires rule a pitch clock violation on Robert Suarez with a 0-0 count. And this don't do this moment because the replays were clearly there. When the clock hit eight, that's when the batter is required to be in the box. And not only that, but engaged, like looking and ready for the pitch from the pitcher.
Ready to go.
Bay wasn't even, he had like 1 foot in the box, was looking down, wasn't even close. He wasn't ready until about 3 seconds left on the clock, and then it hit zero, and the umpires charge Robert Suarez with a pitch clock violation, which was incredibly unfair, and I'm not even sure what the umpires were thinking in that situation. That shouldn't be ball one in that situation. So now what happens? Manny Machado quickly goes, that guy wasn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, the batter was not ready. And the umpires then get together. Mike Schilt, though, comes out. And they had just sent Ruben Niebla out to the mound to talk about the G1 Bay at bat. You know, give him the scouting report, whatever, how we're going to attack this guy. So then Mike Schilt comes out, and he wants to make sure that Manny and none of his players get ejected because he doesn't have any more position players left. If Manny gets tossed arguing, he's got to put Matt Waldron in at third base. I mean, literally, it would probably have been Matt Waldron or, I don't know. I mean, Martin Perez. I don't know who would be the best choice to
go in
and play. Or you move a guy around and put one of them in the outfield or something like Joe Musgrove had to a few years ago.
I have absolutely no idea.
He's out of position player. So he's just trying to make sure. He's arguing, first of all, with the umpires. And he's also telling guys, hey, calm down. So unbeknownst to all of us until after the game, the umpire said, hey, when you went out and talked to your players, you were out of the dugout. That counts as a mound visit.
Which is insane.
Which is now the second mound visit of the inning, which means, according to baseball rules, you have to take out Robert Suarez. However, in the other rule, like we saw last week with Dave Roberts, when you go twice on the same guy, you can't make that change right there. So he has to finish off the at-bat against Bay. And then you have to take him out of the game.
Correct.
So it was not Mike Schilt's intention necessarily to take out Robert Suarez, who then threw another two pitches, or the tag out at home plate, the force out at home plate.
Yep.
And then he had to go to Tanner Scott immediately out of the bullpen because the umpires had said you have to take out Robert Suarez in that situation. All sparked, of course, by the umpire's initial mistake on the pitch clock violation, which never should have happened to begin with.
Well, and I saw a great tweet last night from our friend Laura that said, hey, you know, the pitch clock is supposed to speed up the game. And that slowed the game down for 10 minutes, you know, and here's Robert Suarez out there trying to stay loose, and then Derek Shelton comes out, et cetera, et cetera. And holy smokes, it was a total, total cluster. And I don't know. I mean, our pitch clocks, did they reset them late sometimes? I have no idea. I'm sure they do. But it was an S show, man. It absolutely was crazy. And again, to get out of that jam, I thought was pretty spectacular by Tanner Scott. Now, he had to go sit and wait as the Padres scored three runs,
After he had pitched the day before as well.
After he pitched the day before.
I mean, this was not the plan.
It's not the plan. No, it's and sometimes you have to,
and he
you
said,
have to
you know,
adjust.
Did it work out okay because it was lefty-lefty matchup and he got O'Neill Cruz? Yes, but it was not his intention. It was completely unintended consequences that Tanner Scott ended up in that game. Because there's no way. I was so surprised. I'm going, there's no way you're only throwing your all-star closer for six pitches.
Right, and you're playing matchups here. I thought it was a little bit odd, too. But now, you come to find out, when he came out of the dugout to talk to his players, he was actually charged with a mound visit.
And it's stunning that in six pitches, Robert Suarez both loaded the bases and got two outs.
Yeah, it's bananas.
In six pitches.
Yes, bananas.
That is one of the crazier innings that we've seen, and the Padres managed to get through it and, of course, end up winning the game in the 10th, which brings me to my doo-doo this moment. DD, mega doo-doo. That's okay, Adam.
Whenever you're ready.
That's all right.
I just still got Dave Grohl on the mind.
And we talked a little
bit. DD, mega doo-doo.
About Adrian Morejon getting the job done amazingly in the bottom of the 10th inning. After the rally in the top of the 10th, nice job, Xander Bogaerts. Don't do this to the score, too. Didn't give Jackson Merrill a sacrifice fly in the top of the 10th inning. I mean, there was a whole discussion about blocking the plate. I didn't think there was a blocking the plate necessarily. Call me, he had his hand in front of the plate. Xander ran through it, I think, smartly.
Yeah,
knocked the ball out. That was fine, but that was not an easy play. I mean, he had to make a perfect throw, a perfect catch, and a perfect tag to get Xander Bogaerts. And, he should have probably been out, but that's a sacrifice fly. That's not an error on the catcher in that situation.
That's all day.
So I would think that they could look at that and change that ruling. But in the bottom of the 10th, Adrian Morejon escapes after the three walks by Tanner Scott, gets out of the inning, gets the final ground ball to short, and then they throw it over to first. Donovan Solano, I don't know how you're even thinking of this in that game and that craziness, but you could see it on the TV broadcast. Immediately runs over to Adrian Morejon, hands him the ball, and points at it, hold on to this. This is your first
big league
save. This is special. And Adrian kind of looking like, thanks. Donovan Solano had the presence of mind to go, don't lose this thing. Hold on to this. This is for you. And getting us out of that jam. What an incredible first save for Adrian Morejon.
You got to think for Adrian Morejon, bro, it should get easier for you after that one. If that one was your first one, holy smokes, they're not all going to be like that. You may
never have another one like that.
Seriously, that was absolutely insane that the Padres won that game.
That's Don't and Do This for a Thursday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Torino Saris has some thoughts on that game. We're going to do a little early smart baseball with our game coming up. Sammy's already getting ready for the pregame show. He had an amazing stat that he tweeted out this morning that I was unaware of. Share it all coming up with you. Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. I'm talking to Eno this morning. He's kind enough. He's going to join us an hour earlier because we got an early baseball game today.
Yeah, we do.
We're going to a pregame show in less than an hour here as the Padres go for a sweep of the Pirates. Remember when we had Eno on from the winter meetings? Or at least he didn't realize he was on. He sprinted over.
He was out of breath.
He was out of breath.
And then thought we weren't live. Yeah, that was one of my favorites.
And that was it. That was such a great...
He goes, are we on?
Are we on? It's just a great appearance. And I think we may have a... We may get another one like that today.
Now, he's got an intro, Adam.
Yes, so we'll get to that right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark, by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
According to my sources, Eno's been up since 4 this morning. He's on his 6th coffee, getting ready just for this appearance with us here on Ben and Woods. Eno, thanks for getting up and joining us today.
I am nothing. I am 2 minutes awake.
Are you? You
I
were.
Heard,
on...
I heard Adam call you and go, hello. I'm up. I'm up.
I'm up. I'm up.
Mom, I'm up. It's Saturday, isn't it?
Now you're still in. Are you still in vacation mode? Where did you go on your vacation?
We went up to Seattle. It was really fun. But yeah, what's going on is it's the end of summer, so it's the last couple of days that I can sleep in past 7. So
I can't imagine what it's like to sleep in past seven, but I do. My heart,
I know.
My heart does go out to you. I have two kids, and we're in that weird gray area before school starts, and so they're home and they're insane. And I totally get it. I'm happy to be here with you this morning, Eno. And man, I wanted to talk about quickly the pitch from Aroldis Chapman last night, the 104.7 mile an hour sinker. I can't remember how old he is, but he's been in the league
36
years old and still gassing up guys paint on Manny Machado last night. One of the more impressive pitches I think I've ever seen in my whole life.
Oh my God! I mean, it's basically a front door sinker, you know, because it's coming back to the zone, and it's, you know, Chapman's wild, so Manny's just gonna stare at that, you know. It makes sense, you know. You're gonna take something 105 that looks like it's gonna hit you.
So, you know, so stupid, man.
I mean, it was a great at bat, just generally, because you could tell, you know, Manny's fouling him off, and you can see that he's late. I mean, of course he's late,
of course.
But he's, you know, it seems like maybe he's getting closer to timing him up, because you can sometimes still, you know, time up even the big gaseous gas, but then. One thing that Chapman has done is add the sinker over time. He used to just only be forcing gas, and he doesn't have great command, so the sinker isn't usually a great pitch for him because he can't command it that well. But that was like the perfect pitch.
It was perfect.
It was, you know, and after he'd been battling, just to watch that one be like, oh God. And it was such a great look between them two.
It was awesome.
Yeah, you know,
great moment.
You
know, yeah, respect.
Chapman is gloating basically.
Yeah,
but Manny can't say anything except for, you know, yeah. Wow.
I think he said nice damn. One. I think he goes damn. I mean, that's all you can do, man.
You know, we talked to you about a month ago. You wrote about like the upper limits of what a human being may be able to throw at some point. What. Now, how does Aroldis Chapman, he, you know, percentage-wise, compared to even the hardest-throwing relievers, 105 is, that's a good tick up, you know, another extra percent or so that he's getting that even some of the other crazy hard throwers are getting.
Well, didn't you tell us that every pitch they throw, they become less effective? I mean, my God, that was the most effective pitch I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, he is, I think, an anomaly. If you just look at the hardest pitches thrown in the pitch tracking era in baseball, he's got like the first 10 spots. And, you know, there's other guys like Ben Joyce who's gotten close. You know, he's thrown 104 plus or whatever. There's other guys, but he's got the first spots. He's the king. And what's even crazier about it is that he's doing this at his age. I mean, to continue doing that is really an anomaly. But in terms of like, if you were going to build a pitcher that, you know, could throw that hard, you might build Aroldis Chapman, because one of the things that's really correlated with velocity is the ability to put a lot of force into the ground. And I don't know if you've noticed, but he's a bit of a quadzilla himself.
Yeah, no doubt.
Just massive hot size. And, you know, he's also a big guy. You know, I was talking to Mason Miller, who's also thrown 103 or so. And Mason Miller was like, yeah, if you wanted to have someone throw even harder than us, you'd have to have someone even bigger than us. So, you know, I didn't put it in the story, but it'd be interesting to have somebody like a Giannis, you know. And Giannis was out there and tried to play baseball and looked terrible. You had a Giannis that played baseball his whole life, you know. You might have a chance.
Yeah, he's one of the worst baseball players I think I've ever seen in my whole life.
it was
pretty bad, and really gives baseball, I think, a good name. You know, talking to Eno Saris from The Athletic here on Ben and Woods this morning. I hope this isn't too convoluted, but it's I don't watch enough teams closely enough to know how their manager uses their bullpen. And what I mean is Mike Schilt will sometimes stretch a guy over a couple, you know, and get an out here, and then he'll come out and pitch the first two batters. Then they'll make a change. I don't watch enough other teams closely. You saw Tanner Scott last night. He got one out, big out, was kind of forced into action. Then they went with him again to give him not a clean inning, because it was the extra inning. how much of an effect does this have on relievers, or is it something that we fans just go, oh, you can't do that, man. You can't keep making multiple changes per inning. I know it rankles some of our fan base from time to time when Schulte does it, but do you see it with other teams, and have you talked to pitchers about it?
So is this making too many changes or too few?
Just like having a guy come in the middle of an inning and then taking him out in the middle of the next inning. So having him sit down, get back up. And throw this. You may still be getting three outs, but they're not three straight outs in the game. And we do see that a bit. But, you know, you're trying to get better matchups maybe.
Right.
Whatever.
I think this is probably the biggest source of feel in managing and in the game because – there's certain things you could say analytically, like there's a really good reliever named Yennier Cano in Baltimore who's got just a nasty sinker and a nasty changeup, but he doesn't strike guys out a lot, and he does have a slightly higher walk rate. So he's like a little bit better to bring in the game when you've got a guy on first or second, you know, particularly if you've got a guy on first, because he's going to get a ground ball. And, you know, he could get a double play and get you out of there. But if you put him in the beginning of an inning, like the ninth, he might walk a guy, give up a single because the strikeout rate's not that high, and create a situation out of nothing. And so there are certain strategies with guys where, you know, if they're a high walk rate, high strikeout rate guy, you might want to give them a clean inning because they might put a guy on. That's Chapman. You know, you give Chapman clean innings because he might put a guy on, but he's going to strike three guys out.
Yeah.
You know, and there's also mindset. You know, Trevor May is on Rates and Barrels with us now, and he's a former reliever. And he talks about how certain guys will, when it gets to 3-1, will just be like, next guy. You know, like, I'm not going to give in. It's a little bit like what you saw with Blake Snell. I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to throw it down the middle. I'm going to just keep doing what I do. And if you get on first, I'm going to try to strike out the next guy, you know? So those different mindsets, the guys who will battle, maybe the guys who will battle are guys you put in the middle of the inning because you can't give up a walk, dude, you know? So if you're going to get to 3-1, I'd rather you sort of battle back in, and you can't give up another base runner, you know? Who do you put on with the bases loaded? Not the guy who says next guy, you
right.
know?
Somebody that's going to attack the zone and, try to get a strikeout there. It makes sense. It makes sense to me. I can't sit on question bullpen management very much anymore because it's just so impossibly hard. Every manager wants your starter to go 5 or 6 and then to have your 7th come out for a clean inning and your 8th inning guy and then your closer. And of course, yeah, there's games that go that way, but last night and a bunch of games this year have not gone that way. I think, you know, by all accounts, I think Schulte's done a pretty good job with it. But I just wanted to know if it's pitcher dependent. And I like what you said, you know, when you talked about how guys, certain guys will battle and certain guys won't.
Well, there's also what makes it hard to play along is that there's, you know, certain matchups that we can't even really sort of realize unless we're playing along like really heavily, which is, you know, maybe a guy has, loves to live high in the zone as a pitcher. And he's about to come up against Marcelo Zuna,
right,
who, you know, demolishes high fastballs, you know. And maybe, you know, a guy has a power slider instead of a sweeper, and the power slider is actually a little bit, it's more platoon neutral, so you can throw a power slider to lefties and righties, but you don't want to throw a sweeper to an opposite-handed hitter. So, you know, if your guy has more of a sweeper, he's Taylor Rogers, you know, sometimes you don't want to put him in against righties, you know, and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's a lot of, like, sort of pitch shape and how it interacts with the hitter. But lastly, I would say, like, you know, I might be I'm not living and dying with every game. So I understand that people don't want to do this, but I might give Mike Schulte some grace because he has, like, a completely new bullpen.
Yeah.
So on some level, he's kind of learning the tendencies. And the last part is some guys are fine with getting warm a couple times before they get in. Other guys, you know, I've got them hot. I either got to use them now or I got to ding them for the game, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if Morahan was an interesting guy that way because he's, you know, a former starter. He's had the injury concerns. I'm not suggesting I know this. I'm just saying, like, there may be, if you get Morihan warm, you use him, you know? So there's just different ways that a manager has to feel his way through a bullpen.
Last thing, you know, in the next couple of days, either Sunday, probably Monday now, Joe Musgrove's expected to come back. What will we look for there to see if Joe is Joe? Because you've told us before that you can identify pretty quickly based on velocity and movement if a pitcher is truly himself or if he's not himself when he's on the mound.
Well, I haven't really seen the best Joe velocity since Mexico City last year, and I wonder if it's not back. But you know, my stuff number likes him anyway. So I guess what I'm seeing, what I'm going to say, is that, like, if he doesn't have the velocity, what is his fastball strategy? You know, I talked to a hitting coach recently that said that he has their hitters fit slider against Joe Musgrove. So that's problematic because as the fastball declines, Joe probably wants to go to the slider in counts where he needs a strike.
Yeah.
So then I would say, does he have another pitch he can go to? Can he land, you know, the curve for strikes? Or is there something he can go to that's not the four-seam fastball and not the slider? Because batters are, you know, starting to sit slider on him.
Interesting, man. That's really interesting stuff.
And it feels like, and I'm going to get into this, Woods, in our next segment, but it feels like the Padres are really close here. And if they could get one pitcher back, Musgrove or Darvish, pitching close to what they, you know, have in their careers, that they could really be a force here at the end of the season and in October.
Cease is your dominant. I mean, I know. Sometimes the command isn't there, and he doesn't do it every single night. But he is dominant especially when he's on. So
sure.
he can stop any offense in baseball in the postseason. Once you get there, you can stop any offense.
And King is pretty dang good when he's on too.
Right. So, you know, if you say I'm probably going to win the Cease start and I'm probably going to be in the King start.
Yep.
Now you're starting to feel good about any series because then you just need to win some coin flips, you know, in the other games. And Darvish, you know, if he comes back and feels froggy, you know, and feels better, you know, then maybe he's the guy who can do some games too. So I think they're looking really good.
Love it.
Eno, appreciate it. Thank you for waking up early.
Back to sleep.
Yeah, you can go back to sleep now. Thanks, Eno.
All right.
Our Smart Baseball segment brought to you by 7 Mile Casino. And if you want the rosy outlook, this stat, Sammy tweeted it, came from the UT this morning, even blew my optimistic brain. Have it for you when we come back here on 97.3 The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.